John, are you hearing us now?
I am.
Okay.
I'm here and I listened to your whole meeting.
All right. Well, I've got your bio to give, and then we'll get on with the presentation. So, John Barr has over 25 years of experience in 18th and 19th century research, with an emphasis on land and probate records. His area of research concentrates on the Midwest states of Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, and Minnesota. However, he does have experience in numerous other states, and his research has often led to the far reaches of the United States. He is an active member of the Association of Professional Genealogists and has served as president of the Indiana chapter of the APG. He has given presentations at numerous county and state societies and libraries on various genealogy and history-related subjects. He is the author of Zane Trace, a new Road in a New Country. Is that the Zane Trace in Ohio, John?
That they crossed southern Ohio, across from Wheeling, West Virginia, down into Kentucky.
Right on. Is that what Zanesville is named after?
Yes, it went through Zanesville, Lancaster, Chillicothe, and went down to Maysville, Kentucky.
Awesome.
It was the first government section road cut into the Northwest Territory. Started in 1897 and was completed the following year. It originally was nothing more than a trail wide enough for a horse, and then eventually over the years it got widened. After Ohio became a state, it actually got widened more to where you could travel with wagons. And then the state passed a law for a state road, and it, over the course of time, it kind of, Zane's Trace moved around a little bit, and then eventually it basically got lost. And when I started doing the research on it years back, we found out that nobody really knew where Zane's Trace was originally, so hence the book.
Nice.
So,
well, thanks for that. And if you could give us your presentation, we'd appreciate it.
All right, I'm going to switch over some screens and see if we can get this sharing thing to work, Bill.
Awesome.
Bill, this was easier the other day.
You know, and Carol had the same exact experience. When, you know, we did a test run for Carol's presentation and everything went smoothly. And then when we went live, she had a little trouble getting the screen to share. Seems like with Teams, second time's not the charm.
I guess not.
There we go.
Yes, probate records.
That's it.
Life after life.
All right. Thanks, guys. Sorry about the tech snafu there.
That's all right.
I appreciate you guys having me, and I enjoyed being here. I enjoyed your meeting there. The visiting cemeteries is always tricky. I see you guys got a lot of interest in some of your cemeteries there, and that's actually a good thing. Probate records are an extremely valuable tool to have in your genealogy toolbox. They can lead you to discovering otherwise unknown members, neighbors, family members, property holdings, as well as probably the most important thing is they can add context to the lives of the deceased and their families. Now, what all do probate records entail? Probate records are court records created after an individual's death that relate to the court's decision regarding the distribution of the estate to the heirs and creditors and the care of dependents. Technically, probate is the court procedure by which a will is provided, or approved, rather, to be valid or invalid and encompasses all matters and proceedings pertaining to the administration of state guardianships, etc. Just to demonstrate how important probate records are, everybody here, I'm sure, has heard of the Northwest Ordinance, the land ordinance that said the Northwest Territory is now a territory of the United States. Probate was so that the very first thing covered in the Northwest Ordinance is probate. It specified the order of dispersal for lands within the territory involved in intestate and probate, and provided for widow's dowers. It further provided that wills be attested by or witnessed by three people. And in that same section, it goes into the fact that deeds, leases, etc., have to be witnessed by two people. Now, these laws nowadays are based on this, but are often enhanced jurisdictionally. So every jurisdiction is going to have a little bit different law on the way probates are done, when they're done, where they're, etc. Now, when people start with probates, they always start with the wills. And to be proved as valid in any state, okay, the will, of course, being a legal document, it sets forth your wishes regarding the distribution of your property and care of any minor children. To be valid, it must have a declaration of mental capacity. It must have a signature, and it must have the three witnesses that I talked about with the Northwest Ordinance. Now, wills may also have legacies to beneficiaries, trust, they may name executors, and they may name guardians. You will find this in some wills, you won't find it in all wills. I've seen wills that are three paragraphs, I've seen wills that are five pages. Okay. The alarm on my daughter's watch is going off. Okay. Executors, at this point, I need to point out that executors are assigned by the testator, okay? So whoever wrote the will, they're the ones that assign executors. Administrators, on the other hand, are assigned by the court. So if you die or somebody dies intestate, the court will assign somebody to overlook their probate. Now, wills will typically have several sections in them, but when you look in a will book, and this one is from Warren County, Indiana, when you look in a will book, you'll oftentimes see up here a notice of where it's recorded, who recorded it, the date that it's recorded, and then it'll go into the will, I, Mary Hoffman of Warren County. And I'm not going to read this whole will to you guys, but in the course of the will, she never actually says that she is of sound mind and body. But that is validated in the testimony given at the time that the will was presented to the court, saying here, it's in here somewhere, that she is of sound mind, and it says her will, this will had trust in it. It did not cover anything about a widow's dower. Some do, some don't. Some will assign a dower at some point in the course of the will. Now, what something to remember when you look at a will book, these are transcriptions of the original will. So they are due prone to human error and may have some when possible, you need to try to find the the original will, and we'll get into that here in a minute, where that might be located. Now, as you're going through will records, or probate records rather, you'll always see bonds. Executors and administrators are required to post a bond, and that basically just means that they're going to do their job, or they have to pay the court X number of dollars. This is an administration bond, and it says that we, Mary Barr, John Collins, Joseph Bibler, and John Noble of the County of Fairfield, State of Ohio, are firmly held in the bond of $4,000. That doesn't mean they have to put up that $4,000 up front. That just means that if they have to have it on hand, and if the court decides they didn't do their job, they got to give the court that $4,000. Now, these are important documents to look at for a couple of reasons. These people named as bondsmen, such as they are typically the administrators and probably neighbors, depending on the time frame. Nowadays, they have bond companies that you get your bonds through. But back then, they were neighbors who agreed to put up X amount of dollars in case you forfeit the bond. These documents can be found in a couple of places. Probate packets contain the originals. This happens to be a copy of the original, and you can see their original signature. Here's Mary Bear's original mark, and everybody's original signature. Pardon me. Another type of bond that you may see is a guardianship bond. Guardianship bonds are important because they may show you a couple of things. Here we see that Julia Sherrick was 13 years old on March 23rd of 1870, and that Homer Sherrick was 11 years old on May 20th of 1870. So now we have a date of birth for these children, subtracting ages, so Homer was born in 1859. They were minor children of L.M. Sherrick. Late of, and this is important, Clark County, Iowa. Now you see that this was done in Fairfield County, Ohio, but this gives you an idea of where L.M. Sherrick died, which was Clark County, Iowa. Gives the amount of the bond, $5,000, and who is responsible for the bond if he fails to do everything that his guardianship requires. So those are important documents. There's a lot of information you can glean from those documents. Other documents you'll find may be accounts. And accounts can be accounts receivable and accounts payable. They can be asset inventories, sales accounts, guardianship accounts, and final distribution of the estate. And all of these are recorded by the county, and they're all requirements of any probate. Based on the jurisdiction, the requirements of the probate. These this is account sheets of money paid out by the decedent, who was Joseph Barr, by his son, who was the administrator, David Barr. And this is the amount of money that he paid to each one of these people. Now, you won't always find this, but in these account sheets, or in this particular account sheet, it states that he received $50 in allowance for boarding, basically says of his father. But what it gives it here is boarding from the 4th of April, 1818, to the 28th of December, 1818. In this particular case, this is the only record that shows when Joseph Barr died. So that may be of help. It's valuable for your genealogy to know the exact date that some of these people died, because oftentimes you may not know that exact date. These inventories, these add a lot of context to your ancestors. Okay, we can see here in this inventory that he owned a brown mare, a small brown mare, a brown colt. It goes down through here. And this inventory was several pages. He owns a cutting box. He owned a wooden, a towel and a belt. Goes on down, owned a loom and gears for the loom. Woman's saddle, a couple of half bushels. Like I said, this inventory was several pages long. But it gives you an idea of how he lived and what possessions he had. The other half of this would have been the sale inventory, and that sale inventory, and I'll show you a slide of it. It will show you who actually bought all this stuff and how much they actually paid for it. But there's a lot of context to be gathered from all of these records that are contained in. Now, oftentimes in the case of an intestate probate, you will have what is called or referred to as a partition record. And that partition record typically happens when heirs to an estate, maybe their tenants in common on the deceased property, and they can't agree on how they want to divide that property up. Or maybe people are claiming debts against that estate. So they may be named in these petitions, saying that, you know, this guy owed me this amount of money, and I'm asking that the state sells his property, and I want my money out of the top. So those are another set of probate records that really need to be examined. Sometimes these are kept separate in what they call partition books. Sometimes they're available through the corporate courts. And they can be tough, honestly, to find. I had a county up in northern Indiana tell me, well, we don't do partitions here. And that was basically because the girl in the office wasn't familiar with that term. So terminology also varies state to state, locality to locality. The biggest help to any probate is the probate packet. This is the packet that's filed with the court that contains all of the original records. They're generally indexed by case number, and your ancestor may have had more than one case number. And I'll explain that to you here and read down some other records. There's oftentimes cases where a probate packet may be numbered this one, and then 6 months or 6 years later, there's another probate packet filed. And like I said, we'll get into some of that. I mean, probate packets can be long. This is a scan of one probate packet, and I can't remember who it was for now. You've got a packet filed here, a packet here, a packet here, and some of these may be upwards of 100, 150 images of what's stuffed into these little packets. And some of these packets are not in real good shape. On the cover at the top of the syllabus, there's an image of a probate packet envelope. And you can see how disintegrated that is. So they're not always going to be nice and pristine like this was when it was filmed. Locating probate records can be difficult, but it can be done. In person, you want to go to the Court of Common Pleas, or the Clerk of Courts, or the probate court if your county has a probate court. Some counties do not. It's all handled by the clerk's office. But they will have most of the original probate books and probate packets. Sometimes, and I say this so you'll be patient with these guys, sometimes the probate records have been removed from the clerk's office and they've been put in a central repository, either a storage facility owned by that county or they've been sent to the state archives. If they're in a storage facility, sometimes it will take a while to retrieve those records. So you can put in a request at Fairfield County that we were looking at earlier. They go to their storage facility twice a month. I did some research a few years back up in Chicago, and they go once a month to their storage facility. Most of the time, the court officers, if you ask them, say please, they will copy what's in these probate records for you or what's in the probate packets for you. Sometimes they will not. Chicago will not do it. I drove up there, found the probate I was looking for. They told me I would have to come back in 2 weeks after they retrieved it. And if I wanted to look at it or wanted copies of it, I would have to do it myself. They do that for liability reasons. And, you know, as you can see, some of these records are in pretty bad shape, and they don't want to be responsible for destroying the records, trying to run through a scanner or whatever. State archives, they will make copies and send them to you. State archives here in Indianapolis has an excellent staff, and they will make copies. They will go out of their way to help you guys, or help anybody for that matter. Online searches. Most probate records are online. Many courthouses don't realize that they're online because some of these have been scanned back in the 1950s, 1960s, and there's nobody in the courthouses working now that were there then, so they have no idea that these are online. You can find them on Family Search, and you can find them on Ancestry. On Family Search, why is my slide not changing? My computer's trying to catch up. Apologize for that. On Family Search, you can go through the Family Search catalog and you do a search for Rush County. And you put it in just like this, United States, Indiana, Rush. Or if you type in Rush, this menu will drop down and give you anything that Family Search has that contains Rush. Then just click on your search button and it will take you to all the records that Family Search has for Rush County. Now, sometimes you will get a thing that says these records are available digitally here, and if you push here, you may get a menu that looks something like this, and you can see all of these different filings or Chancery Court. This happens to be out of Mississippi here. The Chancery Court is what it's called down. They have the will indexes, the wills. Some counties have got all of the executive bonds bonds and executor letters and guardianship books. It can be quite a deep search. You'll notice here that these case files, which are probate packets, they're indexed by date and then packet number. And I'll show you in a second how to find that packet number or that case number. And it's really important that you have that. On Ancestry, if you search Indiana U.S. Wills and Probate Records, you'll get a drop-down menu here for the counties in Indiana. You type in, or you drop down to Rush, and it will give you a list of what records are on Ancestry. And you can open these up, and it shows you the microfilm of every record. Now, a note on that. In Ancestry.com, if you get that hint that points to a probate record, and you open that probate record, oftentimes, if you use the left and right arrow key on the screen, it will take you through the rest of that film, and you can see the entire probate record. And it's important that you do that. Like I said, it can be long-winded. Some of them can be 100-plus pages. But it's worthwhile to do that. When you're looking at these probate records, there's a lot of different indexes. There's general estate indexes. There's indexes in the order books. The order books are basically notes from the court of what they did on this day, what cases were heard, and those order books will often guide you to other probate records or even, in some cases, other deed records. You have will indexes. These are sometimes kept as separate indexes. Sometimes they are indexed in the beginning of a will book. You have guardianship records. These are sometimes kept as separate records in separate ledger books. Administrators indexes, and of course, partition indexes. Some of these indexes exist in all jurisdictions. Some jurisdictions don't hold some of these indexes. This is an example of a general index. And if you get lucky enough to find a general index, this came from Family Search. You'll see the date, the person's name. You'll see a case number. Now, on that, go down through that index and find any name that resembles the name that you're looking for. So oftentimes, there's spelling mistakes in these indexes. Write down any case number that you think may be pertinent. Write down any case number you don't think might be pertinent. And the reason I say that, years and years back, I sent for probate records. They sent me two probate packets, and I got stupid and I threw one of them out because the name was totally spelled. A couple years later, it dawned on me that that might have been a good probate record, and when I got it, it was in fact the same person, just a different spelling. As you go through this general index, you go over and you'll see the administration dockets, book and page number, will records, if there was a will recorded, book and page number, inventory, sales doc, and account records. So you can get a lot of information out of these indexes. And these are a lot of records to look at, but in the end, you'll be glad that you looked at all of them. This is out of an order book. And you'll see here that some of these individuals are indexed on many, many different pages throughout that book. Every order book will have contained somewhere in it its own index. It may be in the front of that film, it may be at the back of the film, or the back of the book. But you want to look at every one of these pages. Now, I can tell you from experience, a lot of these pages will simply say case continued and nothing more. But some of them hold information that will point you to other record sets that you need to look at. This is a index out of a will book or will index. And I don't remember where this came from. It came out of the Pennsylvania Archive. There we go. And you'll see that it gives the person's name, the date that the probate was filed, or the will was filed, a book, the volume of the book, and the page number for that will. Now, if you go into Family Search and you type in Rush County, you will start out and you will get a list of all the records that Family Search has for Rush County. If you go down and down here and punch out probate, it will take you to a screen like this that will show you all the probate records that Family Search has on film. Now, for Rush County and Family Search, they show these little icons off to the right. That's a camera with a key above it. If it shows only the camera, you can click on that camera and it will show you the film. If it has a key above it, simply means there's locked film and you have to go to either a Family Search History Center or a Family History Center, rather, or an affiliate library. I'm going to guess that the main branch of your county library is an affiliate. And you can open these records from their computers. That's pretty much wraps up probate. I put some links to help you guys out. I put them in the syllabus. And I went light on that syllabus and just outlined probate terms. I could have made that syllabus a book, but I didn't figure anybody would take time to read it if I did. So I kept it as simple as I could. But Family Search, if you've never used it, you can open up that Family Search wiki and it will give you a map. And you can navigate down through that map, North America, United States, whatever state you want to look at. And then it'll break that state down into counties. And at that point, it'll show you whatever records that they have for the counties. In the Family Search catalog, you can go to the catalog and input whatever jurisdiction you're looking for, and it will show you whatever records they have for that jurisdiction. Ancestry probate, if you use this link, it will take you to probate and wills, and you can search from there by state and then individual jurisdiction. This link I have found important, not just in probate, but in a lot of other aspects to genealogy. It's a law dictionary, and if you run into a term in a record, it's an invaluable, you know, you look at something and like, what is that? It'll be in this law dictionary, so use that. If in the future you need anything, you need help getting into the Family Search catalog and seeing what all they have, this is a tutorial I did that I posted on YouTube. I think it was last year. It's kind of lengthy. It's about 40 minutes long, but it will walk you all the way through searching probate records on Family Search. So that's about all I've got. I could probably go for another hour or two talking about this. I don't want to tie you guys up too long. So anybody have questions or comments?
Well, thanks, John. If anybody has any questions, feel free. I have a, not a comment so much as a a story that related story to share. I have some Mull ancestors in Rush County, and they came over from the Cincinnati area. I don't think it may have been Hamilton County, but I don't remember. But somewhere in southwestern Ohio, and several years ago, I stopped down there, and I went to a county archive or of some sort, and to request the documents they had on the Mull ancestor, and they brought out this like handmade paper, heavy paper envelope that had like the original early 19th century probate documents on like parchment paper. And I had no idea. I mean, I didn't have gloves or anything. And I thought, well, you know, they should not be handled. I mean, they're like, they should be in a museum or something. But I was just startled that they actually had these original, like early 1800s documents. You know, handwritten. It was just amazing. When you showed the slide with the pictures of the will documents, that reminded me of that that experience. I was just kind of blown away, actually. But that was a really unusual experience.
Yeah, that's a unique feeling. And those probate packets, you will sometimes find that original will. We got lucky, and I found my fifth great grandfather the original will, wow. And his probate packet down in southern Indiana here. Yeah, last year I was doing research for a guy and found his ancestor's original will. Believe it or not, I found it in a local library. It had been donated to the library by one of his descendants. So you never know where you're going to run across some of these probates.
Great. Any other questions for John?
I have a question about the affiliate libraries. I was just looking. It looks like there's several around us. But when we go there, do we have to have a library card for that particular library?
No, generally speaking, you can use your computers without a library card.
So they just give us like a login for?
No, actually, if you use what now, you cannot, the disadvantage of that is you cannot do it, generally you cannot do it from your own laptop. You have to use one of the library's computers. But once you get on their computer, you can log into your family's search or your ancestors, for that matter, and dig up the records from there.
Oh, so we log into our own accounts?
Yeah, you'll log into your own family search account, and then you just do your searches. And I will tell you that if you do that, take a flash drive, and you can download every one of those documents onto a flash drive, and then you can take them home.
For free.
Yeah, for free.
Oh. You can also...
On the affiliate library, on the... yes, you can also email them. Yes, right. That's correct.
Oh. Yeah, I forgot a flash drive and had to figure out how to email all this stuff to me.
Yep. Family History Centers. I don't know if you have any in Rush County. I'm sure you probably got at least one. But I think they have all been closed since the beginning of this pandemic. We have four here in Indianapolis, and I have not been able to get into a single one since the pandemic started. So I generally go to the state library since I'm so close, and I use their computers, and they're obviously an affiliate.
Right. The local one, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, and I just went to the website. They say that they have been given permission to open in early June on a limited basis by appointment only.
Okay.
So
what
would be the difference of going to a family history center versus an affiliate library? Is it
Okay. Absolutely none.
Okay.
To be honest with you, there's absolutely no difference. You're going to see the same records. Now, I have run into situations, not just on probate, but on land records. Some records are not even available at affiliate libraries. You have to go to a family search center or a family history center. And that is just when these records were scanned, and you'll see the contract a lot of times at the beginning of one of the, or the microfilms you look at. Some of these contracts are done in such a manner as they can only, these records can only be shared on family search owned equipment, the church's equipment. Some of them can only be viewed at family history centers. I have had cases, I don't know any of you that maybe belong to the Mormon church. And Mormon church members have their own accounts and they can access a lot of these records on their home computers that we can't access without going to an affiliate library. I ran into a case last year or the year before where I went to the state library and still couldn't access the record. Called a friend of mine who's a member of the church. She couldn't access the record from home, and I had to go to a family history center to access the record. So you may run into that occasion. But just, you know, kind of be warned, it might happen.
Do you know where Family History Center is locally to Rushville? Like, where the closest one would be?
I do not, but if you look up, I think if you just Google Family History Center, you can find location of the closest one to you. Or sometimes I'll Google Family History Center near me, depending on.
I think, isn't it Greenwood?
So I have the map up now, and they just have little icons. Like one looks like a blue family search, and then the other one looks like a orange book, but I can't tell which is which.
I'm sure there's a Mormon Tabernacle in your area. You can call them, and they can tell you exactly where it is.
Looks like maybe Columbus.
There is one there.
Or Indy.
John, is there one in Greenwood?
Oh, yeah, there is.
Mm-hmm. I think
it's on 135.
I think that's our closest one.
It says 900 East Stop 11 Road.
Yes.
So that would be by appointment. Yeah, it says please call and request an appointment.
Stop 11 Road, that's here in south of Indy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because that's the one closest to my house, and that's the one that I go to. And last time, I've not been able to get anybody to answer the phone there in a long time. Now, I haven't tried a month or two, so they may have somebody there now, but that is a good one. It's got I think it's got six computers in it, so you don't really have to wait to get a computer. The staff there is reasonably knowledgeable and will help you out in your search.
So that's just like a Mormon Tabernacle, basically, not a library.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a tabernacle. Most of these family history centers are going to be in the tabernacles.
Okay.
And it'll just be a small room off to the one side or the other of the tabernacle.
Great. Any other questions for John? Okay. Well, John, thanks. great presentation. Thank you for sharing that with us today. I attempted to record the audio. We'll see how that turns out. If it turns out okay, I'll post that up on our website. If there are any comments from members about Teams, how that works versus Zoom, if you have any preference, feel free to email us at our rcgs@gmail.com email address, and we'll be deciding going forward whether we want to stick with Teams or revert back to Zoom. So that would be helpful. And if there are any other questions, then thanks, John. Appreciate your time. And
anybody, my email address is out there. I forgot. I just realized this morning I didn't put it in the syllabus. The Bill's got my email. If anybody has any questions or needs help down the road, don't hesitate to contact me anytime.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
All right. Take care, everybody.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
So long.
So our next meeting will be in August.
Okay. It'll be up on the website.